Hello and welcome to episode 66 of the First and Goal podcast. I am Ben Roberts, joined by Sim Longa. And Sim, we got some exciting news to talk about. You know, we got basketball getting ready to start the regular season after a nice bounce back performance, so to speak, in the exhibition game. But before we get to hoops, man, let's talk a little gridiron first. Let's get that out of the way. The Boilermakers are getting ready to head to Ann Arbor this weekend, a place that has been really tough. It's really tough for most teams, but it's been even more tough for the Boilermakers. And Michigan, just kind of a team in general that Purdue has struggled with. And, you know, based off of everything that happened this past month, it's a real tough task to go into Ann Arbor under the lights this weekend.
You can tell my body doesn't even want me to talk about this. That's crazy. Yeah, man, it's gonna be you know, we talked about how last month, you know, it was a was the opportunity for Purdue to really be able to not only get some wins, but I think build some confidence. And obviously the month didn't play out the way we wanted it to, and now the task gets heavy, it gets more difficult. And like you said, going into Ann Arbor, going in the big house under the lights. Michigan has so much. They have a lot to still play for. Obviously, so does Purdue. But I mean, in terms of where they want to be from a bowl standpoint, and even probably trying to contend for the, you know, play in the Big Ten conference championship, they have a lot there. And so, you know, the Purdue's got their work cut out for themselves on both sides of the ball. Michigan likes to run it. They got, you know, they have skill on the outside. Bryce Underwood has been he's been pretty good this year. So. Yeah, it's definitely going to be a tall task for Purdue. So we'll have to see what they're able to bring out on Saturday.
Yeah, and like to your point, you know, you're facing a team that really can't afford a slip up, for everything that they kind of want to play for, you know, with already two losses, one in the Big Ten, and they still have to play Ohio State as well. You know, you got to figure you're going to get their best shot here. And you know, it's tough, man. It sounds like it's going to be Ryan Brown. Odom said that they're still going to have a package for Malachi, which, you know, at this point, man, and it's no knock on like either one, but I'd rather the staff just pick one guy, and just ride it out and see, because the flip flopping, I feel like doesn't really help either guy. You know, the offense has been struggling, and you're going to need a spark here. So not really sure where it's going to come from, but hopefully they can find something, you know, whether it's Maccabee, Malachi Thomas, something in the running game to maybe get things going, because, you know, you're not going to want to get in a shootout with these guys. You're going to have to kind of limit the possessions and really take care of the ball.
Yeah, I mean, I'd say above all else, you know, they need to take care of the ball. You know, we have, as we've kind of documented, and if, you know, if you're listening and you watch Purdue this year, you've seen how it has been a struggle to be able to generate turnovers. And I mean, you're generating turnovers, and even when you occasionally do get one, I don't know if we've necessarily, I don't even know how good we've been in terms of turning those into points the way we should and the way we've seen other teams do against us. So I think that's probably paramount, is taking care of the ball. But I'm kind of with you. I'm with you, Ben. I as it relates to playing two quarterbacks, I've never really been a fan of that. And I know I've been saying it for. I was saying that even back when Brahm was here, you know, we had Sindelar and Blau, and then I think it was Blau and Plummer. I just didn't wasn't the biggest fan of playing two quarterbacks. I feel like it doesn't necessarily allow guys to get into a rhythm. And then to a certain extent, guys will always be kind of playing with that, like looking over their shoulder, thinking that, hey, like one bad pass, one bad mistake, you know, I'm gonna get pulled from the game. Personally, myself, after the Rutgers game last week, I kind of thought it might be time to just let Malachi get the keys, you know, to to go. But obviously, I understand playing a team like Michigan when you haven't had that when you haven't when you've only been getting spot snaps per se, with the exception of like that what like the extended kind of outing you had against Northwestern. I'm not sure if Michigan's the one you want to kind of roll a guy out against. But at the same time, like you said, you're trying to generate something. You're trying to to ignite a spark in this team. And I mean, even just offensively, we've seen a lot of it just hasn't looked as clean, as crisp as it did earlier in the year. I mean, even I'd say all the way even up to probably the Illinois game, you were seeing drives like that looked like, okay, yeah, this is like, this is kind of what we know. And it was more so that you have to cut down the turnovers, but it feels like the last couple of weeks there's been a lot more like confusion, I think, for us as fans, spectators are just like, man, like what are we doing? And it hasn't necessarily felt like the offense has been running as crisp. Now, obviously, that's not all on the quarterback. It's just that's a change you can make to try to see if that, generates something that kind of reverberates throughout the rest of the offense and then hopefully the rest of the team.
Yeah. No, and I will say, like, now I'm not saying that Purdue is going to go in and pull any kind of upset in there, but when you kind of look at Michigan, they're not really a team that like blows people out. Like if you look at like some of the teams that they've played, they beat Nebraska 30-27. They beat Wisconsin 24-10. They beat Washington 24-7, and then last week they went to East Lansing and beat Michigan State 31-20. So, it's not like they're just knocking the doors off of teams. And so maybe, I mean, I think like best case, and we've talked about this a few times, you hope you're kind of there with a shot in the fourth, and you can hopefully make some plays. They had that last week. They weren't able to make the plays, but it's a new week, and maybe there's an opportunity there because it does seem like at least that Michigan will kind of maybe let you hang around some.
Yeah, it does. I watched a little bit of that Michigan State game last week, and I mean, like, if Michigan State was better, which I know it's we're gonna be judging another Big Ten team, but if Michigan State, I think, was a bit better, they probably would have. I actually think they might have beat Michigan. I felt like Michigan was kind of playing with their food for a bit. So like in like you're reading off those scores, and they haven't necessarily like dominated or put belt to ass to people like some of the lesser competition. And obviously we hope and we pray, we cross our fingers and toes to hope that that's not Purdue. But like you said, if they I think if this is a game too where if Purdue plays the better brand of football that we know that they can play, I think that again this will be another game where going into the fourth you have a chance, you have an opportunity. I can't say I'm not going to sit here and say, oh, they'll have the lead. I just feel like you'll be there in the fourth to where Michigan, again, the onus will be then on Michigan in terms of you're at home for all the reasons we talked about earlier. Being at home, having stuff to play for, having no margin of error for themselves in terms of where they're trying to get to, they're going to be the ones who have to make the plays. And sometimes that type of pressure situation causes you to make a mistake. But we have to do the work in the first three quarters to get to that point. But yeah, I wouldn't be entirely surprised. Let me say that. I wouldn't be entirely surprised if we got to the fourth and Purdue was still there with, with the fighter's chance, was still with, hey, a stop and a score away type deal. But it's a lot to say it. And I mean, it's easy to say it, but it's a lot to go out and do it. And this team, as we've seen over the last month, has kind of had an issue with being able to play four straight quarters of Purdue football in a good way.
So we will see what happens again. The Boilermakers will travel to Ann Arbor, take on the 6-2, 4-1 in the Big Ten Michigan Wolverines. It'll be a 7 p.m. kickoff on Big Ten Network. Jeff Levering and Jake Butt will have the game. So we'll see what happens, man. Just kind of want to see kind of what kind of effort and kind of team will be out there coming off a 6-game losing streak on the road under the lights. It'll be an interesting game for sure there. But similar switch gears, man, because it's officially basketball season. The next game that tips off will count as the Boilermakers wrapped up their exhibition two game set with a win over University of Indy, 92-49. And Sim, last time we talked, we both kind of laid out some things that we wanted to see. And obviously, like, we're not going to go crazy because Purdue dominated, a lesser opponent that they definitely should have. But everything that we wanted to see, the Boilermakers did. And, that's really nice to see, as we get ready to start the regular season.
Yeah, man. They like you said, it's against lesser competition by comparison, but they really did perform better in the ways we wanted to see. They dominated the rebounding, the shot much better from three. You saw a lot more guys. You saw more guys get good, more run. I think we talked before, Liam Murphy against Kentucky only got about 2 minutes. He got just under 11. Antoine West got about 15 minutes, and in their minutes they were productive and they contributed. And that's kind of, harken back to last year about how we would talk about, what are you going to get from the others, and that being something that's really key, really critical. And if you can get the type of production that you're that I'm seeing, that you saw last night against, moving forward, maybe not to that extent to where, like Jacobson having, having being what, 10-8, and then Jakari having 20, and then what, Omer having 8, Antoine West having 8, and then Liam Murphy having 5. Like, that's a lot of production you're getting off your bench, which we like I said, again, we couldn't, that wasn't necessarily something we were expecting last year or could count on. But I think it speaks to the depth of this team and what they have. And like you said, it was nice to see after the Kentucky game when apparently the sky was falling because you lost a exhibition game. It was just nice to see us come back out and play a spirited, tough, tough effort and dominate a team like UIndy like you're supposed to. I know that's kind of the other part of it is like people say, oh, well, you only played, they're not that good. And it's like, yeah, but it's your job to go out and like, and confirm that, and they say, oh, well, Purdue should win this pretty easily. Well, you still have to go out and do it. So I think they did a good job of that too. So no complaints here. And like you said, we get real, we get cracking next week, for real. So yeah, I'm sure Monday evening, or Sunday night, the stress meter will start to pick up for me internally. So super excited about that. But like you said, we did it. We made it to basketball. We've made it past the exhibition games. Now we've made it to the real stuff.
Sim, talking about production, we got to talk about Jakari Harris, and the game that he played. In 18 minutes, he had a plus minus of plus 32, which is just insane. Just dominating on both sides of the ball. 7 of 10 from the field, 4 of 5 from three, 20 points. 4 rebounds. Like, the man was everywhere. He was obviously the best player on the court, that night. And just what an impressive, outing from him. And it just kind of validates what we had heard, of all kind of summer about how, him and CJ have both taken that sophomore leap. And man, he took a Michael Jordan like leap there because he was balling out.
Yeah, no, I mean, for him to be that efficient, like you said, in 18 minutes, 20 points, 4 or 5 from three. He also had what, 2 steals, and he had a block as well. So like you said, he was doing it on both ends of the floor. Yeah, again, it encourages you about what he can provide for you off the bench. Like I think last year we saw glimpses, and I think especially I remember specifically, I think it was the West Coast trip where they went out to, was it Oregon, and then I think it was Washington, Oregon, and then maybe Washington and Oregon. But yeah, it was Washington, Oregon, where he had some plays where you could kind of tell that the game was slowing down for him. And I always think that with freshmen, there can be that can be that learning curve of just like when like the you know the college game moves at a different pace than the high school game. And it takes some time for you to be able to kind of catch up with that. For obviously for some it can happen faster, but you started to see, middle of the year, I think, that okay, like he's I think he's starting to figure this out, starting to figure this out, but you needed that consistency. And so that's why what I'm gonna look from him and CJ this year is just consistency. Not necessarily that, hey, one has got to make sure that they're giving you this, but I think it's I'm always gonna look at those two kind of attached at the hip in terms of like combining whatever their stat line is. And you can't have we can't afford to have, I believe, many games this year where both of them are not impacting the game. So yeah, I mean, just super, super happy for him having the game that he had, and hopeful that this is kind of the start of a really solid year for him.
Yeah, and to your point, Sim, about how kind of Jakari turned the page, I saw it on Twitter, and I apologize, I can't remember the handle that I saw it, but since the calendar year of 2025, Jakari has shot 40% from three, and so just another weapon for a real versatile wing that if he can be productive there just helps kind of that offense flow so much better. And speaking of that, man, we got to talk about Daniel Jacobson too. It was really good just seeing him put together another really good performance. 10 points, 8 rebounds, 5 of 5 from the field. Daniel might lead the NCAA in field goal percentage strictly because he's just going to catch so many lobs this year.
Right.
There's gonna be games where he's easily gonna, have 5 of 5 from the field, 6 of 6. And Sim Paint talked a little bit about it after the game, but just the threat of having DJ and even Oscar to an extent of being able to roll to the rim and throw it up to them just helps open the offense up so much, and it was really lacking last year. But it just gives you so many more options because if the defense then takes that away, it opens up the three so much more. It opens up kind of lanes for Brayden to kind of do his thing. And it I think it really is what kind of can take this offense to the next level is that threat of the lob on the heck and roll there.
Yeah, it definitely makes you defend the pick and roll, but it makes you defend a lot of our action differently. Like you said, because if you want to cut off like the Trey and Braden pick and roll action, like you're gonna have to like you're gonna give up something this year. And like you said, you can have a situation with that where you can have Oscar or Daniel who's in the game, and you would see the defense, okay, they're going to try to rotate over to Trey, and then all of a sudden it leaves a defender open. I mean, leaves a guy open. And, I see either Morris easier baskets for whoever has the ball or whoever might be like someone's cutting to the basket. It just feels like there's a lot more options as to how Purdue will be able to kill you this year because of the fact that you have guys like Oscar and you have Daniel, two guys who can do in that pick and roll action themselves, or who can obviously just be on the floor. Like you said, they're just lob threats. Yeah, I think Daniel late in the game, I believe it was from Aaron Fine, threw up a pass and he caught it with one hand and threw it down. And I was like, oh man, like somebody's getting put
Well,
on a poster.
he had
That's for sure.
multiple highlight dunks, and like the one that nobody's talking about, I feel like, is the one where he dunked off a missed free throw. When was the last time you saw a Purdue player be able to do that? It's just gonna be fun this year to watch Brayden and some of those other guys just kind of just throw it up there and let him go get it. And I thought kind of Paint had a real interesting quote, when he was talking about it, and he said it's almost like a shot blocker on the defensive end where even, when they don't block every shot, they alter a lot of shots. And it's the same thing on the offensive end where it may not get a lob every time, but if you run that play, it might open up things for three, and it's just going to make that offense run just so much more smoothly.
Yeah, no, I agree. I agree, man. It opens things up. You can't necessarily like I think defensively you against Purdue, you there's gonna be like you're have to make a sacrifice. You know, it's like, okay, well, I want to take this away, but like, shit, we might get killed by this. You know, I will take this, you know, take the pick and roll away. But now all of a sudden, okay, in order to do that, it means probably guys are leaving shooters open. And that can be a problem. I think you said it's, yeah, especially defensively. It just, I think not even so much of of people contesting, but I think having a guy like Daniel and then obviously with Oscar, but those are two guys who I think make you just give you a little, make you reconsider. You know, driving to the basket, because when you see it, when you see a big who's there who can, like you said, who can alter your shot or toss your shit, you know, toss your shit into the stands, that'll be, that'll play in your head, that'll play in your mind in terms of how you go about it. It makes, you know, maybe you pull up for a more a contested jumper, or you know, you pass it and you swing it around. So yeah, just like, again, the depth that we have, I think both in the front court and the back court, you know, offensively, you hope that the hope has been that with these additions that you've made, it's going to make the game easier for Braden, Fletch, and Trey. And then kind of the same thing defensively, you know, just not having to rely so much on a few guys being able to do the job of many. I think now you have you have many guys who can do the job of many. And that's good.
And speaking of the depth sim, kind of one last thing here as we wrap it up. There's going to be, you know, some interesting decision here, at, you know, whether essentially whether Antoine West will redshirt or not. You know, that's about the only guy, either him or Omer are the only two that could potentially redshirt since everybody else played in the exhibition games. And you know, I don't see Omer doing it. So it really comes down to Antoine West and if he's gonna redshirt or not. And you know, it seems like everybody's kind of split on if he will. You can kind of see both sides. It feels a little bit like Jack Benter last year, where you know, nobody was questioning how good of a player he was. It was just kind of where are the minutes going to come from?
That's always kind of what I've looked at this year, of like, if on who, depending on who redshirted, it was just kind of like, well, it's probably because there's not enough minutes to go around. Correct me if I'm wrong, doesn't he have aren't don't you have like 3 or 4 games into the season to kind of make that decision in terms of redshirting? Is that correct, or is it after you made now?
I don't believe so, but I don't know that because Payne did say that they will make the decision and make the announcement before this game.
Okay.
So I'm not 100% on that, but if they're making that decision now, it would lead me to believe that they can't. But
Right. Okay.
actually, DJ did, so I guess you can. But
Yeah, they
Payne
just
did say
might
that.
want to make, I mean, yeah, they just might want to make it sooner though, just to make sure that there's no lingering questions. And I mean, I hope that if Antoine does end up redshirting, I hope he doesn't take it as like a, you know, a bad thing. It just should be, I think if he takes it the same way Jack Benner did, where it was like, all right, cool, I'm gonna practice and continue to work on my body, work on my game, to where next year there are no questions about whether or not it's gonna be me, you know. Because based on everything that we were hearing in the offseason, the Antoine West is a seems like a very extremely dynamic player, a guy who can be a strong two-way player as well. So getting that extra, getting, you know, getting this year to basically continue to work on his body, you know, work on his game, it can only bode well for him. It's just an unfortunate situation for him. But if this does play out, it's just, I think it's just more of like, there's just not enough minutes to go around, and as opposed to just having you active on the bench and, like, you know, essentially, I wouldn't say like wasting a year, but using a year up while you're there, it just doesn't necessarily seem like the smartest idea when you can just kind of, you can stash them away for a year. But, you know, what do
No,
I
I
know?
agree. So we'll see. Except Paints did say them. I would assume that decision will probably come out Monday. But we will see where they land on that. But either way, one thing we do know is that the regular season will tip off next week, Tuesday, November 4th, in Mackey Arena. The Boilermakers will get ready to take on Evansville. It'll be a 6:30 p.m. Eastern tip-off on Big Ten Network, strictly Big Ten Network, so you don't have to worry about anything with Big Ten Plus. So can't wait for that to start again Tuesday, the 4th, 6:30 p.m. Eastern tip, and we'll get things rolling. And you know, this stuff will start counting for real. Speaking of for real, just want to again point out the volleyball team. I know we spoke a little bit about this upcoming weekend, and the matches that they have sim. But you know, two kind of game, two matches on the road in Michigan, and you know, it's kind of like how we said, like it's just go up there and take care of business this weekend, and come back with a couple of wins.
Yeah, no, it's really just that cut and dry. This is, you know, this needs to be treated like a business trip. Do not play with your food. Go in there, Ann Arbor, East Lansing, up, you up vibes, you up wins, out of there. Yeah, there's just no, like you said, it's just these are a couple wins too that, like, you know, you just got back in the into the top 10, as we mentioned, you know, on the previous pod. So, you know, you want to continue to kind of rack up. Like, now, just because you're in the top 10 doesn't mean now it's time to relax. You know, you like, these are going to be hopefully some of the easier matches you have on the way in, because, you know, we talked about, you know, Penn State, Wisconsin, Minnesota still left. So yeah, just I hopefully this is just your standard business trip, minimal stress, because we like stress-free sports around here.
We definitely do. So, good luck to the ladies as they will get their two-game road trip started on Friday evening, 7 p.m. start at the Breslin Center, and then they'll head to Ann Arbor on Sunday for a 2 p.m. start. Both those times Eastern time. So, good luck to the ladies there. That'll about wrap up this episode. Want to thank everybody for all their continued support. I know it's been a struggle to with this football team this year, but basketball officially regular season is here. Hopefully we'll have a lot more fun stuff to talk about. But either way, and most importantly, boiler up.
Yes, sir.